You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 21st of September 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to a special edition of Midori House, coming to you live from Somerset House today as we bring you an evening of handsome ideas and fresh conversation from the launch of the London Design Festival. Coming up in the show, we'll speak to Deputy Festival Director Christopher Turner on what makes London's celebration of design an epicentre of the global creative community. We'll also talk to Petter Naby, the man behind sleek tech design firm Punkt, about his mission to tame technology and streamline our lives through simple innovation. And later on in the show, Andrew Tuck and our very own Tyler Brulé will join me as we delve deeper into what makes good design. All that and more coming up right here on Midori House on Monocle 24. Plenty ahead of us then here on this special edition of the show. First up, though, we're being hosted by Punkt. Let's speak to Petter Naby, founder of the technological design firm called Punkt. Good name. I like it. Petter, welcome to the programme. And first of all, we're surrounded by some handsome editorial, some handsome creative around us. But first and foremost is this MP01, the new phone from Punkt. It's a beautiful thing to hold in your hands. Talk us through this phone that does a tenth of the things that the phone in many people's back pockets will be doing as they listen to this program, maybe even the device to which they're listening to this program on. You've gone back to basics. Tell us the story.
Yes, right.
Do you like a question, by the way, that lasts a minute and a half?
No, it's certainly yes. It's exactly what it is. It's a mobile phone. Focus boils down to the essentials of what the phone should be doing. Good to have a conversation with. The necessity of this phone has been in the works for quite a long time. The mobile phone is our fifth product that comes in and probably more clearer communicates what Punkt are doing.
So this is kind of like this is very much kind of like your flagship product then, I
suppose. Absolutely, yes.
And just tell us a little bit about the history of Punkt, because you know it's not like you're a company that was formed 6 months ago and you have five products. We were saying before we went on air actually that every company that's 2 years old has 500 products just to make sure they're scrambling around into every single market that they can get their hands on. It's not a great sign of confidence often. So tell us about when you guys were born and why you only have five products, why this is only the fifth.
Right, first of all, you know, we are very serious about our products. That means that we don't want to make just a product for product's sake. Mm. And we have built and structured our organization in that way that we can afford to do so. So quite agile in creating partnerships rather than fixed costs. So that's sort of on the basis of an organization for doing so. So there is no true demand for just, you know, you have to go out there because you have to make a living. That's one part. You know, if you're a product, you know, a company like Punkt, we have to do meaningful things. And it starts from meaningful, you know, purposeful business, so to say. And even though it's consumer electronics and there are, so to say, beautiful objects, I think very many people actually do appreciate a lot of the aesthetics of these products. Behind that, though, there's a very strong mission of the overall idea of what Punkt is about, and that is really about giving people's instruments to control and manage a little bit more technology. Today we are a little bit overtaken and we are more steered by technology than us steering technology. So, therefore, you know, about time then and the long time it takes to make products that are meaningful, has some kind of purpose, and also are actually beautifully to look at and hold in their hand, takes a long time.
And this is the idea as well, presumably, that you know you've made a product here with your first mobile phone, the first Punkt mobile phone, that that actually sort of takes options away from people. It makes people have conversations in real life because you can't have them on WhatsApp, presumably. You can't have an Instagram account when you're on this. You can't be on Facebook or Twitter. The idea is that you're giving people some time to actually have proper conversations and use their mobile phone to send a text, to phone their wife, to do whatever it is.
To converse.
To converse.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, we tend to think that good design it comes from necessity. You know, it's necessity is the mother of invention and all the rest of it. So really, you've invented technology that takes us away from technology.
Yes. technology is supposed to be there servicing us.
Yeah.
And I think technology is great. I think technology is doing, you know, fantastic things for humankind, you know, really. And I am 100% for, you know, all technology that can do that. And I think, for instance, the center of today's distraction, for instance, is the smartphone. It's a beautiful piece of technology, has so many qualities to it. But the problem today is probably we have sort of been taken with the pants down because we haven't really have any social structure or how to deal with such a powerful thing that sits now on every table or in the pocket, meaning that it's really more, you know, we get these pushes of push information to us all the time. We have lost the ability to focus and do one thing because it's the endless set of attraction that sits in this squared or rectangular piece of technology. So, I think, again, as you said, you know, for me, technology is there to service us, but we are currently, in a way, servicing technology.
Well, we're addicted to it. You know, people are always, you know, reaching for their back pockets as soon as their bus isn't immediately at the bus stop. They have to wait 30 seconds or something. Not in London. people are searching to, you know, to play a game or to find out what's going on. And this is presumably what you're not doing. But when does this idea of good design being able to encourage conversation and interaction in real life, when does that stop becoming a nostalgia act?
First of all, it starts from what you set out to be doing with a product. So I'm very concerned about being perceived as nostalgic because I think I'm the most modern consumer electronics company in the world.
Petr Nebi arrived on a skateboard. Would you just like to tell our listeners?
What?
So tell us about that. You were saying that, you know, that it is not a nostalgia product. It is meant to be absolutely usable. It's at the cutting edge of what it does, but it's meant to be usable.
Well, yeah, it's the next step. No, it's really okay. We got this piece of technology in our pockets now. We for some reason we thought that can do anything. You can switch on your microwave oven, or you can monitor your children's behavior, etc. I think now we are at the stage where, okay, we had it for some time, time to reconsider. It's good for a lot of things, not for everything. However, we as modern human beings, we need certain instruments, as I call them, just because we are grown up with them, we need them, and it actually serves us, where you take charge of doing something rather than it comes to you and says, look at me, you know, I'm wanting to have your full attention. So I think that's why we shouldn't be or should not ever be perceived as nostalgic or reproduction kind of product company, because that's the intention of these products. And if you think of the form factor of our type of products, is, you know, many commentators can go in and say, okay, this is the DNA of that kind of product, etc. However, you know, we are talking and we are building, and that's going back to the time factor or element of our, you know, punkt as a company, is that none of these products are ever supposed to be changed. So, meaning that if I will not make a MP02, which looks anything different than the one current one, it is one timeless piece of design. It can sit in a rococo ball, or very modern, or very raw, any kind of environment, because this design is, you know, it's clearly functional driven design with a beautifully touch of poetry, can go anywhere. So that's also, you know, think of, I can guarantee you that in 20 years, that I can, will be selling still that mobile phone.
Now, it strikes me that you're a man that likes buttons. Because
yes.
it's very rare, and people who have buttons on any device now are considered sort of some sort of Luddite. Tell us about why it seems that you love buttons so much, and it's part of the punkt, you know, not necessarily the aesthetic, but it's not the only product of yours with buttons on it. It's refreshing change, perhaps.
Thank you, and you know, buttons, I think it's very pleasing when you want to do or trigger an action. A button should be there.
Satisfying.
They're very satisfying.
Yeah.
And, you know, mechanical things, mechanics, I think, it resonates with all of us. If there's good mechanics inside, in that object you're holding in your hand, and it feels even much better. So buttons are good. Of course, you do buttons also, again, always with a purpose. You don't just spread them all over. You have to be meaningful with your buttons, and they need to have a strong reasoning for being there. But we certainly think that that's something is missing now with all the glass and sliding finger environment. Lots of great stuff there as well, but it cannot only be that.
And is this you said that this is sort of, you know, all the design DNA that's in Punkt's history has kind of gone into this phone designed by Jasper Morrison, we should say. Tell us about that conversation, how that started, your relationship with Jasper started.
Well, you know, I actually popped Jasper an email. I think it was 2007. You know, time sort of goes, in a way I feel like I've been doing Punkt for 20 years, yeah. But I haven't. But in some time, 2007-08, I just sent him an email just shortly describing I actually want to just maybe make a company, but first of all, I just want to make an alarm clock. And I gave him the reasoning for that.
That's a very specific.
Very specific.
It's either a company or an alarm clock. Yeah. I don't know which way I'm
going. Well, it is an alarm clock, and it might become a company. And the company is called Punkt. And I think he sort of found me quite crazy in my approach, and you know, I wanted to make the world's most beautiful alarm clock in, you know, 2008 when everyone were thinking about the next Apple, etc.
Mm.
So, however, I think there were two elements there. One, of course, why I wanted to make it, because I couldn't find any alarm clock that would service what I think was something that would last long. And aesthetics that is also timeless. And currently or before us, they were all cheap plastics or plastic reproduction or nice browns. Or they were jewelry that were not functional at all, just pretty things sitting there. So I think he sort of saw that they, you know, share that kind of vision, that there are sort of many consumer electronic products that have either gone all the way to multiple servicing or to just jewelry or some pretty thing that just sits there and you know.
This isn't a dust collector, this is a proper object.
Exactly,
there's a point to it.
Yeah, so that's how it's all started that way. That's a long, tedious process. I wanted to also, my offset, we're a Swiss company. I myself live in Italy. I really wanted to start doing manufacturing in Europe as much as possible. So we started Germany, and we started, however, our manufacturer there went bankrupt, so it was a very tedious process.
And just finally, how many ringtones has it got?
10.
10, classic, good round number. Petr Nevy, founder of Punkt, and the very handsome MP01 mobile phone. Thank you very much for your time. This is a special edition of Midori House, live at Somerset House on Monocle 24. Stay tuned. Up next, we have Jay Oglesby of Barber and Oglesby.
Monocle's unrivaled network of editors and correspondents around the world bring you a brilliant new collection of books, the Monocle Travel Guides. And the series kicks off with New York and with London. London can be a big beast to tame, even for the people who get to call it home, but this ever-changing and regenerating capital can also charm you with its beauty. The Monocle Travel Guide to London is a celebration of all the things that the Monocle team loves about this mighty metropolis, and they're brave enough to let you see the wrinkles too. London's a global city, but the Monocle team will help you see it as a series of friendly local gems, with this guide to the shops, restaurants, music venues and museums we think should edge their way onto your itinerary. Whether it's a mid-morning run along the South Bank, the best Greek meal at Lemonia in Primrose Hill, or a handcrafted umbrella from London Undercover, our fresh ideas will leave you with a clear, crisp view of the capital. Published by Gestalten, these books are for people who want to get the most out of their stay, however short, and feel like locals rather than tourists. Pick up the Monocle Travel Guide to London in Monocle shops at monocle.com and in all good bookstores. The Monocle Travel Guides. Cities are fun. Let's explore.
Okay, and we're live from Somerset House. It's an edition of Midori House. We're going around the houses today. I'm Robert Band, and as I say, we're live at Somerset House because it is the opening of London Design Festival. We were talking about Jay Oglesby before. I think he's coming in later on in the programme. But none other than Christopher Turner is here, who's the Deputy Director of the London Design Festival. Christopher, welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us in the fine environs of Somerset House, branching out this year. This is the first time you've been here. Tell us, this is a bit of a $64 million question, but how do you ensure that the design festival itself is well designed, that people can get around, that people know where everything is? Because that's quite it's a bit of an octopus, isn't it? How do you make sure people know what's going on?
One of the things, if you've been to Milan, you know that it's completely disorientating. Everyone gets lost. No one quite knows where the centre is, what the focus is. And here at the London Design Festival, we pride ourselves on aiding navigation. We have a guide, which 60,000 of which are distributed around the festival, and we're an umbrella organization. There's no fringe to the London Design Festival. There are 400 events all over London, and there are various hubs. The Victoria and Albert Museum is a hub where you'll find lots of installations, talks and workshops. You know, what some of our, you know, most elaborate installations are there, like with this year in the Norfolk Room. There's an installation by Misha Traxler with hundreds of glass bulbs full of insects that interact when you approach them. They start clattering around and swarm before your eyes. There's installations in the courtyards. We have a well-established relationship with the V&A. Since 2007, we've been doing installations there. And Somerset House is another one of these new focal points.
It seems like only a matter of time before Somerset House became...
Well, fashion moved out and design has moved in, okay. So we're really pleased with that, you know, and... This year, we've got an amazing offering at Somerset House. We've got 10 designers here in the West Wing, you know, some of the most recognized names in the industry. Max Lamb is exhibiting a 27-meter tree that he fell down into various pieces.
It's a beautiful piece, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great piece, and it fills the whole mezzanine gallery. There aren't many rooms in London that could accommodate a piece like that. We've got installations done in collaboration with Samsung and Twitter. So we've got a lot going on here.
You've got a lot going on, that's what I mean. It's tough to corral the troops, isn't it? Let me ask you about design as a kind of capital of making and of creativity, because that kind of happens anyway. So what does is the festival just a great sort of great umbrella, really, to kind of get everybody to visit this designer, that studio, all the rest of it? Because it's very spread out, isn't it?
I think the festival, you know, it started in 2003 and by Ben Evans and John Sorrell. And, you know, really it's spawned imitators all around the world. There are now like 100 design festivals and design weeks all around the world. And London was the first that kind of set the model for that. Every city realizes the importance of design in projecting a forward-looking image of themselves. And, you know, London is the cultural capital of design, so...
And a lot of people, whether it's the London Design Festival, whether it's Fashion Week, whether it's Frieze Art Fair, there's a lot. Everyone says it's all about starting conversations with people. If you got £1 for every time you said that to people, how rich a man would you be? Or is this less about conversations and actually looking at stuff?
Well, I obviously have a lot of conversations here. I hope it is like a forum and a network for people to meet.
This is what we're doing right now.
Exactly. You know, lots of people come to London, especially for this festival. You know, just at V&A, they have 60,000 extra visitors a week during the festival week. So, you know, it's a great influx of people. And, of course, all those conversations happen like they do in Milan or anywhere else between creative people. And we hope to actually make it even more international. Next year, we're going to, in Somerset House, I'm directing the London Design Biennale, which is going to be an entire site takeover of Somerset House, with up to 40 nations submitting installations and exhibitions on the theme Utopia by Design. So, you know, London will, in September next year, become even more international.
I mean, I wanted to, we're going to touch a little bit later on in the show, actually, between where art and design cross over. Yeah. But I wonder whether just as a brief trend analysis, we're in Punk's temporary showroom here, whether there's a turn towards the more practical side of things, more hands-on, more rough surfaces maybe, or at least stuff that is less ephemeral.
Showroom,
all this technology's, you know, always a little bit rough and ready because
we just saw that
it evolves. The technology evolves so quickly that it necessarily has to be rough and ready. But certainly Samsung, you know, threw on the river in their galleries there, have exhibited a television that it is one of the kind of thing that you might want to keep, become a piece of furniture in a way that, you know, other pieces of furniture that are here to stay.
Nice one. Well, Christopher Turner, thank you very much for your time today. That was Christopher Turner, Deputy Director of the London Design Festival. You're live with Monocle 24. We're at the London Design Festival at Somerset House. Next up, we're going to be speaking to Monocle's own Editor-in-Chief, Tyler Brulet. Stay tuned.
From London, this is Monocle 24.
De Nova York, de Toronto, de Londres, de Zurich.
E que Singapura. Ich in Toronto.
Nach Paris, nach München, nach Berlin, nach Frankfurt.
New York, Toronto, London, Zürich, Istanbul, Hong Kong, Tokyo.
Antu Destameona in the Monocle 24.
Diffusé autour du monde, 24 heures sur 24.
You're tuned to Monocle 24.
You certainly are tuned to Monocle 24. I'm Robert Bound. This is Midori House live from Somerset House at the opening day of the London Design Festival. Now look who's here. It's Editor-in-Chief of Monocle, Tyler Brulet, and Monocle's Editor, Andrew Tuck.
Peekaboo. Yeah, hello.
Exactly. So you're fairly fresh into the festival. What have you taken home as yet, metaphorically speaking? I'm not suggesting either of you have a bulge in your jacket.
Well, I've had my eye on that big bowl of crisps behind you, but I thought that was wrong to have those before coming on the show. So what's interesting here about being at this event, we're here for an event for Punkt, a really interesting technology brand. One of the nicest things is just looking around this room at the advertising they've done. It is really wonderful advertising. It goes to, takes you back to the idea that you should have simple messages about what you do. You should have a simpler life. It's about, you know, what technology brand, what phone brand would tell you to turn your phone off.
And quite good copywriting.
Yeah, really good copywriting as well.
In a very beautiful way by a fantastic Cypriot graphic designer, also an amazing agency behind it as well. So that's good. And I've got my eye on this cerise swivel chair you're sitting on, Rob.
Oh, you like that?
I like it.
You're on the grey sofa, but guess what mine does that yours doesn't do? It swivels.
Yeah. Andrew and I, we could try to sort of move our bums on this, but I think I'm just going to sort of leave a mark.
You're going nowhere fast.
And you've got your Design Week socks on as well.
I have. I've got my monogram
crazy
Design
socks.
Week. Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the creative with Petter Naby at the top of the show, in fact. I'm wondering what sort of difference that makes. This really sort of sets the stall up for Punkt as a brand, actually, that you know that you're not going to get anything which does 52,000 things and remind you in sort of 20 years when your wife's anniversary is. This is a very different brand, it seems. You can tell that from the creative. That's a very important thing, presumably, from a brand perspective, Tyler, that top down, you kind of know what you're dealing with.
Absolutely. And I think what's outstanding with this, in a way, I was going to challenge Andrew a second ago, because he called it a technology company. In a way, I don't think about this as a technology company. They just make fantastic objects. Now, they happen to enable us to manage the cables under our desk and get up on time and all these various things. But I like the clarity because we all know that we see so many companies in the digital space trying to co-opt the design world. It's actually not really a message. They just want to hang on to the crowd. And here I see real legitimacy.
Yeah, but what's great is, I guess many brands would be looking at, you know, creating some video that goes viral. They've created something. When I came in, I said to the guys, are you selling these as posters? Yeah. I would love one of these as a poster. They are going to be collectible. And there's the idea that they've made something tangible on paper. It fits in with our story. And you understand it's a really tactile experience what they're making.
And as Petter was saying, with that MP01 mobile phone is an idea, is a product that gives you time because it doesn't try to do too many things. You can text on it, you can phone on it, and maybe you can use your computer to do what a computer does. That seems kind of fairly. There's maybe an accusation of Luddism in like 2015 that a product like this exists. But it seems so much more than on a nostalgia product. When everybody here at this party is not checking their phones, they're talking to each other. It makes a difference, right? It comes from the product, presumably.
Also, I mean, if you read my column this week, Rob, which I hope you did, I said, oddly, I had this encounter with a new gardener. And you know, here you met someone in the early 20s who was just on a good old Nokia, which, I mean, very much looks like this phone. And I think that there is something to be said for that, that notion of focus. And I think that's what actually comes through. And I'm looking at the page also, which appears in our magazine. Yeah. There's a post behind you, distracted, focus. And there's a lot to be said for that.
Certainly for you, Rob.
I don't need editorial comment now.
No, but you're the person who normally throws their phone across the room because you don't like technology.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the phone for you, I think.
This is the phone. It's time we got back to the party, right? Andrew Tuck and
thank
Tyler
you.
Relay, thank you very much. You're live at Somerset House with Midori House. I'm up next, Eric Levy and Melkan Gürsel. Thank you for tuning in. And it's 1826 here in London. The sound of the hubbub around you is the sound of the London Design Festival. This is Midori House. We're live from Somerset House. And with me are Eric Levy and Melkan Gürsel. Welcome both to the program. And we're talking because you've done this fantastic. Well, can you hear what I'm saying? Yes, you can. No, only slightly. Sorry. I'm going to try and speak up. Or we maybe have some headphones for you, Ari. I'll sit a bit closer to you. Because your warm, wet installation has been described as sophisticated, which you'd hope for, at least, and transcendental, which is another one. And it's kind of an emotional room. A lot of these rooms are full of products, and they engender different responses in people. But this seems like a real... it's really at the point where art and design meet. I wanted to know how you two met. Professionally speaking,
we met maybe 10 years ago, and we never really worked together as doing in a project, but we spent a lot of time together being in different places, seeing exhibitions, being in Milan, being in Istanbul, being in Paris, and so on. Melkan knows very well my artwork, I know very well the architectural work, and where we decided to have this opportunity and pursue it further. It was an exciting moment because it's not about a job. It's about an ephemeral experience. And this is what you actually described, resulting with something that's more emotional rather than a product, a chair, an ergonomic. We're talking more about emotional ergonomics.
And does it feel the same for you, Melkan, that there's a sort of happy marriage here between the art and the design worlds? Could people look at your piece, or can either of you look at this piece and see where art and design meet in it, and your practice and Ari's practice collide?
I believe so much as an architect, the collaboration, architecture and art, because when you are looking around, everything is very similar. And that kind of strategic coming together, it will make all the architectural work or artistic work different than the other one. And that was an experience for us also, and maybe the experience to work together for the future also. Because I believe so much, you know, that kind of collaboration, because different ideas, when they come together, it's making everything unique and different, and which we need in this world, I think.
And it's nice that you come out of the rain on the Strand here in London, and we walk into your room and we see rain playfully dripping off your moving sculpture. Could this have existed anywhere but London? It looks like you've just opened the roof.
Yes, no, absolutely. The idea, we are talking about an idea and not about a final shape that it has a certain dimension and it can't be anything else. It's a feeling that we get. We can extend that to a football stadium, or we can be in a micronic space. The transition, which is important, is not what you see, is important what you take with you.
What you feel. And a lot of people there's been a lot of people on their cameras, a lot of people have been sort of hypnotized by this piece. Presumably that's the point.
Hypnotized, yes.
Hypnotized. That's a good way to end it. That is all we've got time for. Arik Levy and Mel Kent-Gersel, thank you very much for your time. And that is it for this special edition of Midori House. Thank you to all the team. Midori House is back at the same time, same place, different place tomorrow at 1800 hours in London. Until then, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you for tuning in.